This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. May is about to become June, and spring will soon turn into summer, and the cicadas will be with us throughout this seasonal transition. And today, we want to talk about what the green side of our local world looks like right now. How's your garden? How's your landscaping? Your trees? Your plants? Are you seeing a lot of cicadas where you are? It's our monthly gardening show, and for the next hour, we'll be taking your calls at 513-419-7100. We'll also take your emails at talk@wvxu.org. Our guests today are Hamilton County Extension Office Agent Joe Boggs. Joe, welcome back to our program.
Well, thanks for having me on again. This is a pleasure.
It's a pleasure for us also. And Great Parks of Hamilton County Nursery Technician Tim Osborne. Tim, welcome to you also.
Well, thanks for the invite. I'm happy to be here.
And if you're listening and you want to join our conversation with your questions or comments or observation, do so at 513-419-7100. We're also generally curious what you're seeing on the cicada front around the region. Are you seeing a lot of them? Are you not seeing much of them at all? Same number, 513-419-7100, or email us at talk@wvxu.org. So, gentlemen, I have to start off by saying I live in downtown Covington. We talked a little bit before the cicada emergence, I think, with the gardening program, but also with Dr. Gene Kritzky, the national expert on cicadas, who's based here in Cincinnati. He said I might see some in Covington and Newport, and I know some people with yards and trees are seeing them. I have not seen cicada one in person. So what are you guys seeing, Joe?
Well, all I can say, Michael, that's just hugely disappointing. I mean, you know, as an entomologist, that would be horrible not to see a single one. But what we are seeing, and I'm speaking for, you know, different parts of Hamilton County as well as Butler County, we're seeing what Gene had predicted and what we've been saying all along, is that there are going to be areas where you won't see them. There are going to be pockets of high populations, very near pockets of low populations, and we call that highly localized. And just yesterday, driving on Princeton Road, for example, in Butler County, you could drive and hear them singing, and I'll get to which ones are singing in just a minute, and then just go a very short distance. I mean, you know, a quarter mile and nothing, silence. And then where you would hear the singing was very surprising. You would expect it in a forested situation because these are hardwood forest insects. But in some cases, it was in some older landscaping with big trees, but, you know, a lot of mowing going on, and I was actually a little bit surprised. So it is going to remain highly localized. And what we're seeing now is, and this was surprising to me, of course, there are three species, as Gene has said before, there are three species that are emerging. And I love the genus Magicicada. You know, is derived from magic because they just magically appear every 17 years or in other cases, 13 years. But nonetheless, what we're seeing dominating is a species that I've always thought emerged a little later. It's Cassini, Magicicada Cassini. And they have a very distinct sound. The males have a very distinct song. And so if you want to identify these without even seeing them, just go on. It's called Cicada Mania, and that's easy to Cicada Mania. And you can listen to the songs of the males, and that's what's happening right now. Is Cassini is now singing their little hearts out, and now they're starting to chorus. And what that means is, you know, they are then hopefully, well, for them, attracting females. Now, all that has to happen before you get the females laying their eggs. And I'll be quiet here for a second, but then I do want to get back to some things that are some misconceptions regarding the damage.
All right. Well, we will, because I think that's what a lot of questions have centered around people who are concerned about certain trees or plants or bushes. Mm-hmm. We've heard a lot of questions about. But go ahead and pause, Joe. I do want to ask Tim Osborne from Great Parks of Hamilton County. I imagine parks are an ideal place for cicadas to emerge because the land is more likely to have not been disturbed over the years. So are you getting reports from around the park system, Tim?
Yeah, the wooded areas are very conducive to cicada. Fortunately, I'm out more in prairies and meadows where we do a lot of our harvesting and propagating, and I'm not seeing or hearing many of them out here at the nursery, but I was on the Badlands Trail earlier this week, and you could hear them singing. It wasn't deafening, but you could hear them. But also, I was telling Joe this before we went on the air that I'm about 3 miles. The nursery's about 3 miles from the town of Harrison, and that they are loaded down there with them. So I found that interesting.
So Joe, they've been gone for 17 years. Now, when they're singing, is their musical references a little dated? Are they singing some Nelly Furtado hits from like 2004? Or
a little ABBA thrown in there, right? ABBA thrown in there. Yeah, it's it is interesting that they are so consistent that way. Of course, that's in their DNA. But also what is consistent is pretty much their behavior. And that's so nice that it's so predictable, you know, even after 17 years. Of course, on the other hand, and I know Gene has emphasized this, and it's very important, that we always learn something new with each brood emergence. And even though now with modern transportation, you know, people can zip around, you know, to experience different broods. As a matter of fact, I had emails about people wanting to come up from Florida to experience this emergence. And these weren't just entomologists, but researchers can zip around and, you know, we're always going to have a brood someplace. But with that said, it's still interesting how much more we learn each time. In this particular case, for example, as I said earlier, you know, in 2008, now that was a whole different brood, more to the east side of Cincinnati. The species that emerged that I saw first was the really big of the three species. It's called Septum decum. And in this case, I'm seeing a little bit of some of those, but like I said earlier, it's mostly Cassini. So that's been kind of a surprise.
Very.
I think oviposition is going to be interesting to watch as well.
Well, I know there's a lot of interesting angles to watch here, and we've got phone calls from people who want to talk about what they're seeing. I did get an email from Jacqueline who says, I live in Milford, work in Batavia, and I have not seen or heard a single cicada. Thank you for that email, Jacqueline. You can also email us your observations or questions about gardening in general at talk@wvxu.org or call us at 513-419-7100. Let's get to the phone lines now. We find Amy up first. Hi, Amy. What's your question or comment?
Hi. I just wanted to say I am completely fascinated by the cicadas. And in our yard, we have this huge old sugar maple that is covered with thousands of cicadas.
Oh, my gosh.
And what's cool is if you go out there at night when it's quiet and the birds aren't chirping and really the cicadas aren't singing at that point, and you just go listen, it sounds like a light rainfall, because you can hear the cicadas crawling over top of their old shells and kind of flapping their new wings that haven't fully formed, with an occasional thud here and there from cicadas dropping from the tree.
Wow.
It's a very cool, different sound that you don't think of when you think of cicadas.
It's very cool. Amy, thank you so much for sharing that observation. I have to say I would be terrified. I know with no reason to be terrified. I'm a bit of a wuss when it comes to bugs, but thank you for sharing and demonstrating, or at least explaining, those beautiful, beautiful sights and sounds you've got out in your part of town, Amy. Thanks for listening. Let's go now to Karen. Hi, Karen. What's your question or comment?
Hi, I have a plant question.
Sure.
And for the cicada part of it, I live off of Kyle Station in Liberty Township, and we don't have any.
My goodness. Well, good, I would say, but other people are excited to see them.
My question is, I have a coral bell that I have a huge attachment to. It was given to me by an old lady friend that's since passed away. We're tearing our deck down this weekend, and I need to replant it. Can I do that now? I want to separate it because it's huge, or is it too late in the year to do that? Will I lose it?
All right, Karen, I'm going to place you on hold, and we'll go to our panel. Tim, is this something you can help with? The coral bell, Karen's getting ready to take down the deck and wants to know if she can split this coral bell.
Well, ideally, you would want to do it when the plant was dormant. But sometimes we can't go by the schedule like that. So if it has to be done now or you're going to lose it, I would certainly do it. I would keep it moist, keep it in a cool spot until you get it back in the ground. Yeah.
All right, Karen, I hope that's helpful for you.
It is. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call. Let's go back to the phone lines where we find Joy. Hi, Joy. What's your question or comment?
Okay. My question, first of all, I don't have any cicadas. I'm in Beaver Creek and not a peep of those little good creatures. But my question is about, I have a plot that I intended just to plant corn, and it is a community garden, which means we have a lot of us in that area. And the one thing that has stumped everybody, and it's very frustrating, is this grass that looks like corn. So if you plant corn, you can't really tell the difference between your corn and this grass. And I hear it's called Johnson's grass. And I was wondering, is there a way to eradicate it and just somehow have a healthy gardening experience, but not the grass from hell or something like that?
And you said the grass from hell is Johnson grass. Is that how you identified it?
Yeah.
All right, Joy, I'm going to place you on hold and turn it over to our panel. Joe Boggs from the Hamilton County Extension Office. Can you help Joy with the grass from hell?
Well, I could. And Tim, I don't know if you want to launch into it too, but Johnson's grass is a non-native that is, she described it perfectly. When you see it coming up, even in our agricultural fields, it looks like, well, the first time I saw it, that's exactly what I thought it was. I thought it was escaped corn in a soybean field. So it does mimic corn quite a lot. The downside is it spreads by underground stems called rhizomes, and one plant can give rise to a lot of other plants. That's why we see it in clumps. That makes it kind of unfortunate in terms of digging it up, physically removing it. You can, but if you break off any of those rhizomes, you can get new plants from those rhizomes. And by the way, Johnson's grass can come up in turf grass where it looks like little bomb blasts. Now, the downside to both situations is that, you know, if you dig that up, you might leave a little bit of the plant. In terms of total eradication, you know, it may be where you might need to bring out an herbicide, but you can use different herbicides that are burned down herbicides, that sort of thing. However, it is a pretty stubborn weed to get rid of. Tim, I don't know if you deal with it. I bet you have some out your way.
Oh, yeah, that was termed correctly, for sure. And just to add to that, Joe, it's one of the worst invasive weeds that we have out here because it's perennial.
Yeah,
you know, a lot of the annual weeds, they're bad, but we can get to them in the rosette stage or cut the seed heads down before they actually go to seed. But with Johnson grass, it grows at such an accelerated rate, and like you said, it's rhizomia, so you might pull it out, but then you've created maybe 10, 15 more plants. So I would agree with an herbicide treatment for the best results, probably a systemic herbicide, and just let it die down to the roots. But yeah, it can definitely be problematic in a garden situation.
There you go, Joy. Good luck with the grass from hell. Hope you have the garden from heaven soon. Let's go to Vishnu now. Hi, Vishnu. What's your question or comment?
Hi. I have two questions, actually. The first one is, we just moved to a new house in Mason, and we have a bit of a blank slate in the front yard. The landscape guy I have contacted said that he could start with, you know, planting new stuff, perennials and et cetera, by another month or so. So I wanted to find out if, cicadas are a problem in Mason, first of all. And what kind of stuff I should avoid planting in the front yard. And secondly, I have a bit of a problem in the front yard where we had a pipe repair. So we have lost a lot of grass. There's a huge bald patch. And I'm trying to grow some grass back using grow tracks, the mats that have the seeds in them already. I try to water them every day, but they become very dry after every period of water, and nothing seems to happen. So is there a better way to grow grass in this bald patch, especially this time of the year?
All right, Vishnu, I'm going to place you on hold for just a moment. We got a few areas to digest here. Tim, I want to go to you first to talk about his blank slate of a front yard. He says a landscaper is planning to put in some perennials, but feels like maybe they're going to do that in about a month. Any suggestions on which ones might thrive best in Mason?
Well, that's a pretty wide open question there. It really depends on the site, the exposure. I mean, are we talking sun, shade, west facing, north facing?
I can ask Vishnu. I've got him on the line still. Vishnu, do you get a lot of sun in that front yard?
It is east facing. It has a lot of sun.
Okay.
Okay. Oh, okay. Great. So, you know, you're asking me. I'm always going to lean toward native plants, you know, because they're just a lot easier to care for. They have a lot more benefits, and pollinators love them. You know, they're great pollinator plants. So,
well, maybe suggest two native plants that you like that you think will look beautiful and in front of a new home in Mason.
Well, I think if we're talking perennials, you can't go wrong with a purple coneflower or a goldenrod. You know, goldenrods are great, great pollinator plants. And they're, you know, they get a bad rap, really, because as soon as you say goldenrod, people associate it with hay fever. And that's not it at all. That's a total misconception. Ragweed is the culprit of the hay fever. But goldenrods are great pollinator plants. They're sort of like the native oaks in the tree form, where they are a host plant for numerous native insects.
And of course, the goldenrod is the state flower of the Commonwealth of Kentucky. So we endorse that, Vishnu, even though you live on the Ohio side. And Joe, can we help out Vishnu at all with the bald spot he's got in the new lawn?
Well, and I'll tell you, even though I teach turf grass management as part of what I do with Extension, we have a saying: turf grass is the canvas upon which we paint the rest of the landscaping. So you don't want a blank canvas. So something to consider, Vishnu, is that if you have these areas, you know, that are open, instead of struggling with turf grass, you know, follow Tim's suggestion and take advantage of it, you know, and put in some highlights to put in. And you don't need to have, you know, a bounded bed or anything like that. It can be more natural looking. I love the goldenrods. There are a huge number of different types of goldenrods. We always tend to focus on a few. But where you do want to get the turf grass going, and by the way, let me back up, because you said something earlier. Mason, it looks like it's falling outside of the cicada zone, at least so far. I would not base any plant selection, though, on the periodical cicadas in your area. I would go with, you know, what you would like to do. If it is turf grass, this is a struggling time of the year to get it started. Hot, you know, conditions. These are cool season grasses, so they do better in the spring and fall. If you're failing and you still want to do this, then maybe wait a little bit later, like towards the fall, and pick a turf-type tall fescue. I'm being very specific. Turf-type tall fescue. Most of your garden centers and other stores have this as fescues. And so our turf type tall fescues tend to do a little better. You need to have the seed in contact with the soil, but also have exposure to sunlight. That's where you get the maximum germination. But this is a tough time of the year to get turf grass started. You can still have success, but you've just experienced and described exactly what the main challenge is: keeping it wet enough. And if you start germination and you have the little root radicals coming out and they're just getting started, and then it gets dry, then basically you've halted germination and you can go to the point where the seed then does not produce plants. So if you're struggling, you may want to wait, but I want to echo what Tim is saying and again emphasize this idea of slanting away from just solid turf grass and put in some of these other plants of great interest.
There you go, Vishnu. I hope that is good advice for you. Good luck with the grass. Good luck with the landscaping. We're going to get back to the phone calls in just a moment. You can get on the line, too, at 513-419-7100 or send your emails to talk@wvxu.org. It's our monthly gardening show on Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Thanks for listening to Cincinnati Edition On Demand. Did you know you can have the show delivered straight to your smartphone every day? Just go to your favorite podcast listening app, search Cincinnati Edition, and subscribe. You'll be able to keep up with all our great conversations with newsmakers, public officials, and other interesting people from the greater Cincinnati region and beyond on the go, anytime, anywhere. It's great for those days you can't tune in to catch us live. Weekdays at noon on 91.7 WVXU.
I'm Randa Abdel-Fattah. The saying goes that the news is the first rough draft of history. As we explore an NPR's throughline, it can be very, very rough. But it's a task we take seriously. That's why reporters at this station and NPR work hard to bring you the facts and get it right the first time. So don't settle for a rough first draft. Support journalism you can trust by giving now.
And there is no charge, of course, for listening to WVXU. You can listen as long and as often as you like. As a public radio station, we're here for anyone who wants to listen. But WVXU does depend on listener contributions for half of our funding every year. So that's why right now we are counting on you to give, even though you're not required to. If you can give a little back, please call us 513-419-7155 or donate online at wvxu.org, where you can see all of the wonderful thank you gifts that you can choose from. And you are listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. It is our monthly gardening show, and for the rest of this hour, we are taking your calls at 513-419-7100 and your emails at talk@wvxu.org. Our guests today are Hamilton County Extension Office Agent Joe Boggs. Hi, Joe.
Hey, how you doing, Michael?
I'm doing great. And Great Parks of Hamilton County Nursery Technician Tim Osborne. Hello, Tim.
Hey, Michael.
We are getting tons of calls and emails. Penny from Wyoming writes in to say, my husband went out to mow the lawn and decided not to. It was moving because of the cicadas. There were so many who were working to shed their exoskeletons. What a sight that must have been, Penny. And I'm sure the cicadas are grateful that after 17 long years, they did not emerge only to meet your husband's blade. We got an email from John who writes, there are cicadas in Wallace Woods. He says, just a short trip from downtown Covington down Scott Street. You can hear the volume increasing as soon as you pass 15th. This old pocket neighborhood is so much louder than similar places like St. Bernard or Wyoming. That's interesting. Reference to Wyoming in both of those there. We got another email from Brian who says, we have cicadas in Park Hills, Kentucky. I noticed my first one last Friday. It is so interesting how they are hit and miss all across the region. Let's go back to the phone lines now where we find David. Hi, David. What's your question or comment?
Hi, I'm calling from Oakwood, Ohio, and I hear a lot about the damage cicadas cause and, you know, the dread, but I want to know some benefits. I mean, are some birds or animals getting some extra food this year, or do they help aerate the lawn, or I don't know. Are there any benefits to having cicadas?
David, thanks so much for the question. We'll hang up, and I think Joe will be able to answer that question for you.
Boy, there are four very clear benefits. And I want to start by saying, you know, we always have to recognize that periodical cicadas are part, an important part of eastern forest hardwood ecosystems. So there are some very important benefits. Number one being is that, okay, they do damage when the females lay their eggs into the twigs, the stems on plants and so on trees. And of course, that causes the twig tips to die. Well, once they die, next year, for example, you know, if you've ever pruned a tree, you know what happens. If you prune back to a point where you have buds, you'll get maybe 2 to 3 new buds breaking. So the following year, you actually get a denser canopy. So we joke that they're natural pruners, but they really are natural pruners. The other benefit is you kind of alluded to it, and that is the nymphs, you know, are tunneling around in the soil, you know, for 16 years, and that does loosen the soil. It helps to aerate the soil. So that's a benefit, and that's also been well documented. Of course, when the cicadas die, you have this huge return of nutrients that helps to actually feed that extra canopy. And of course, again, that's been well documented. And finally, they feed a lot of animals. And, you know, we joke about that a little bit. You know, we talk about raccoons just becoming stuffed and laying by the road. I can't eat another one, you know. But as a matter of fact, they do feed a lot of animals, a lot of birds, Black bears, for example, in the eastern part of, well, my native state of West Virginia, you know, they come out of hibernation and they're starving, and all of a sudden this, you know, banquet shows up and they can eat a lot of protein. So they're very important as a food source for a lot of animals. And of course, finally, number five is they are of great interest to entomologists. I just threw that last one in.
Well, they certainly are. And if they are of interest to you further, David, and the rest of you, we have a great podcast series at WVXU.org, Brood 10, the Cicada Podcast. It is hosted by WVXU News reporter Corey Sharber, and his guest is Dr. Gene Kritzky, who, like Joe, knows a whole lot about cicadas. So you can check that out and stream it at WVXU.org or download it there, wherever you get your podcast. Back to the phone lines now. We go to Chad. Hi, Chad. What's your question or comment?
Hello. I'm in the Fairfield area. We have a lot of cicadas. And I, yesterday, just saw a cicada head with wings and legs crawling around with no body. And my wife told me, oh, I just heard about that. That's the cicada zombie fungus. I was hoping you could talk about that.
Oh, my gosh. Chad, that's terrifying. But thank you for calling about it, because there was an article going around explaining this fungus that I believe even in the headline in a reputable publication like the Washington Post said something's making cicadas' butts fall off. Chad, I'm going to hang up, and we'll go back to Joe on this one.
Well, first of all, I want to go back and say something. Gene Kritzky is the expert. I just learned from Gene and try to pass along the information. I do want to say something very quickly, Michael, so we don't lose this. You all have been highlighting with the podcast with Gene, Cicada Safari. So we have all these folks calling in and saying where they are and where they're not seeing cicadas. I would very much urge that you download that app on a smartphone. It's easy to do. You have links, I believe, with WVXU. And that way you can take a picture and report exactly where you are seeing the cicadas. And that's very important for gathering that data.
Well, we do appreciate the station plug, but tell us about the butts falling off.
Okay, so... So first of all, I think what you're actually seeing is not the fungus. So far, I've not seen real heavy infection so far. But you know, you'll see the cicadas going around with their abdomen turning white, about 5%. Now that's roughly the rate of infection. But what I have been seeing quite a bit of, in fact, I took pictures of. I'm going to be doing a posting on this. My postings on Buckeye Yard and Garden Line, hopefully later today, showing exactly what David described. And it's very clear that what happened to the abdomen was a bird got it. And so, you know, what you'll look for when you see the head and thorax and wings, but no abdomen, if you look closely, you'll probably see where the abdomen's torn off, because that's a very nice, easy protein meal for a smaller bird to get. And so that's what I think you're seeing. I don't think the fungal pathogen has risen yet to where we're seeing a lot of zombie cicadas. It's sure to, I hope to come. I actually hope to get some pictures of it, but I don't think that's quite happening yet.
Well, that's reassuring, I suppose. So thank you for that information. We do appreciate it. We'll go back to the phone lines now where we find Dean. Hi, Dean. What's your question or comment?
Hey, on YouTube, I see a lot of videos about making raised beds using corrugated metal sides instead of all wood. And I was wondering, is there anything in a corrugated metal or roofing panel sheet that would be toxic for vegetable gardens?
All right, Dean, nice question. Thank you so much. Let's go to Tim Osborne from Great Parks of Hamilton County. Is this something you can help with, Tim?
Well, I'll try. I think the purpose of using a metal structure rather than wood is longevity. I don't know. Of course, if it's a zinc-coated metal, I would probably shy away from it. I don't know. Magnesium, you know, there's a lot of good nutrients like magnesium and iron and things like that that are in the soil that you actually want. So, you know, I don't know. I've not ever done that with raised beds. So maybe do it. Maybe try it. You know, do a small plot and let us know. But I would not think it's going to be detrimental to a vegetable garden.
Joe, anything to add to that?
Yeah, I think it's that's very good points. About the only thing I can think of is you really have to have a lot of zinc in the soil to get zinc toxicity. It is actually considered to be a micronutrient for plants. If you have a soil test done, you'll see zinc in there. So one thing you need to be aware of is if you do have a soil test, don't take it close to where you have the zinc-coated metal, because you'll get a false read. On the other hand, if you got plants, with their roots coming over, once again, will they take up enough zinc to reach a toxic level? I think that's doubtful, but if you have any concerns over that or using other, like occasionally we'll get questions about pressure-treated lumber, and okay, do you want the roots right up against it? Probably it'll kill the roots, but nonetheless, all you need to do is take some plastic like Visqueen, the same kind of plastic that you lay down, in crawl spaces and that sort of thing, and just attach it to the inside to have a barrier between the soil, the plants, and whatever it is that you're using that you're concerned about root contact. That works very well. It's pretty easy to do.
All right. There you go, Dean. Good luck with that. We appreciate the call. I want to note that we've got a couple of callers on the line with similar names. I've got an Anna and I've got an Ann. And just to be clear, I'm going to Anna first. Hi, Anna. What's your question or comment?
Hi, it's actually Anna. It doesn't matter.
My apologies.
my question is about growing squash and cucumbers. We live in Blue Ash. I guess anywhere in Ohio, it's the same. I've heard about specific bugs that affect those crops, like pumpkins and squashes and everything. I also read that they come out once a season, lay the eggs, destroy the plants. So if I would delay planting, then I would not have to deal with those bugs. Is that correct?
All right, stand by, and we'll see if we can find out if that's correct. We've got this bug on the cucumber plants. Joe, what can you tell us?
Well, there are a couple, and I know them very well because I've experienced them myself, which is really awful when you're an entomologist. You say, well, how dare they? But squash bug is a sucking insect that can show up in huge numbers and can, just deplete the squash and cucumbers, not so much cucumbers, mostly squash. And then you have squash vine borer, which is a clear wing moth that the caterpillar feeds in the stems. Something that we forget very often in vegetable gardening is the value of what we call row crop covers. I know, Tim, I think I've actually seen those out there. You can kick in on this if you have more experience, but you just put a hoop over the plants. You don't want this contacting plants. You can buy the material just about any place that sells, materials for gardening. And it's called crop row covers. It's very thin fabric. And you just put that over the plants, which then precludes insects from coming into the plants, being able to find them. The downside, though, is you're also going to preclude pollinators from coming in and pollinating. So you have beautiful plants under the covers, but no squash. Or if you're growing cucumbers, no cucumbers. And of course, those we're worried about, the cucumber beetles. So what you need to do then is either periodically open it a little bit to allow pollinators to come in, or just hand pollinate. Take a paintbrush. And you can very easily, it's not hard to do, and you can go online and see pictures of this, to be able to tell the difference between the male and female flowers of these plants. You just take a paintbrush and take the pollen off the female flowers and just put it over to the male flowers. And frankly, what I found is that also kind of helps you to maximize, the fruit production, because such things as zucchini, I mean, my gosh, you end up at the end of the day with giving zucchini away to everybody and your uncle, so you can get, less fruit, bigger fruit, and have a little control over it. So, Tim, I don't know if you want to jump in on that too.
Well, yeah, we don't. I think what you've seen out here, Joe, is just we're solarizing the beds, the production.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, I just wanted to clarify just to the audience that we are a native seed nursery out here, so we're producing biodiversity and taking it out in Hamilton County and just creating pollinator communities and habitat like that. So vegetable, we don't do a lot of vegetables out here, but Yeah, what you described, Joe, is totally accurate. I agree with that. But I think what you've seen out here is more where we will sterilize or solarize the soil. And that's where we're promoting germination. Any weed seeds in that production bed will germinate and then literally get fried because it's so hot under that poly.
There you go, Anna. Did you have some final thoughts on this, Joe?
Just very quickly, Michael, because Tim brought up the final thing, and that is with a number of these insects, they do overwinter in the soil in some form or fashion. And what Tim is describing is a way to eliminate those. Also, at the end of the season, if you're not using row crop covers, just turn the soil so you can bring up that stage, and hopefully that insect will not make it through the winter.
There you go. Yeah. Anna, good luck with those Anna, I apologize again for mispronouncing that. Anna, thank you for the call and good luck with the cucumber plants. And now let's go to Anne, or is it on?
No, it's Anne.
Okay. Hi, Anne. What's your question or comment?
Well, I have a cicada report, and I have a question about that. We live in Northwest Dayton, and we are inundated with cicadas. We had a thistle that grew up close to the house where we didn't catch it to get rid of it, and it is literally covered. Every single stem, leaf, everything has the cicada shells on it. And they're in our trees, and it is deafening. But the thing that I wanted to ask about is the 2 days before the first cicada came out, our birds and our trees were going berserk. They were so loud that we couldn't even sit out on our screened-in porch and carry on a conversation.
You think they knew?
I wonder if they could hear them working their way up through the soil or whatever. But it was very strange. So that's my report from Dayton. But question is, I have been fighting for 22 years with this kind of ivy that grows in my yard, which is ugly, and I don't want it. And I think it's Virginia creeper. Do they have any suggestions? I know that its tendrils go underground, and then it comes up because I've tried to pull it out, and I've found it everywhere.
Okay, well, let's see if we can get some answers to that question for you. Anne, we appreciate the call. Is this something either of you can help with? Anne thinks she's got a problem for the past 2 decades involving Virginia creeper.
Well, Tim, I suspect it's not Virginia creeper, right? I mean, I think Virginia creeper, you're going to see that go up on plants. Tim, I'll let you jump in on that, too.
Yeah, I would agree, Joe. That probably not Virginia creeper, although if it is Virginia creeper, that's not a bad thing. It's a great native woody vine. It's got beautiful fall color. So I wanted to ask Anne,
I'm sorry, I did disconnect with Anne. Sometimes I keep on hold when I think there's going to be a follow-up, and I'm not always correct. So I apologize. If Anne wants to call back, we'll get her back on.
Did she say it was in her lawn or in her yard?
It was around the house on the outside.
Yeah, that would probably want to climb the house.
Okay.
So yeah. I think she's talking about maybe. I mean, see if you'll agree with this. I was picturing around in the landscaping and maybe out into the lawn, but I think she might be describing Creeping Charlie, do you think, Tim?
Yeah, it certainly could be. That would explain the long-term battle.
So what should she do to get rid of Creeping Charlie, if that's what it is? If it's not the Virginia creeper, but it's the Creeping Charlie, what does she need to do?
Yeah, we're not making these names up, are we, Tim? It's another real
they
name.
All sound like Netflix series.
They really sound like something bad, don't they? Yeah. Creeping Charlie is a tough one because it is a perennial, and it's very difficult to manage. It's also called ground ivy and a few other terms. It does smell nice. I think it's in the same family with a lot of other nice smelling things, but about the best way to get rid of it, I hate to say this in terms of how anyone might approach turf grass management. Even thick lawns can be infiltrated with Creeping Charlie, but much less so. So one thing we talk about with weed management and lawns is doing everything you can to thicken up that lawn, because grasses are pretty strong competitors against weeds. Creeping Charlie gets its tendrils, you know, a tendril up on areas where the lawn is very thin. That may be a shaded area where it might be better not to have turf grass, but have something else that can withstand the shade. So you're slanting away from a nice location for Creeping Charlie. At the end of the day, though, if all those things fail, I will say the turf grass herbicides, you know, like 2,4-D and some of the others, are actually pretty effective against Creeping Charlie. However, it's not going to be taken out by one application, but we tend to reserve the herbicides as the last ditch effort. Do all these other things first, and then if all else fails, you know, don't make the herbicides first, make them last as a last ditch. Okay, I need to bring out the big guns on this one.
All right, Ann, good luck with that. Again, if we frame this incorrectly, feel free to give us a call, and our producer, Selena, will bump you up to the front of the line so that we can get some clarification. That's my bad for disconnecting, perhaps, before we had all the information that our experts needed. We got an email from Nasrin in St. Bernard. Says, we live in St. Bernard, and there are cicadas everywhere. One of our cats ate one, and he did not like it, so he is avoiding them. But the birds, especially Robin... It's Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks, wrapping up the monthly gardening show now with our last few minutes and our guests, Joe Boggs from the Hamilton County Extension Office and Tim Osborne from Great Parks of Hamilton County, also joined again on the phone by Ann. Hi, Ann. So sorry about perhaps disconnecting before I got all the appropriate information. So go ahead and tell us what you want to know, and I'm going to keep you on the line until we get an answer for you.
Okay, great. I actually had some landscaping done, and I asked the guy that was doing the landscaping what it was, and he couldn't identify it for me. It does climb. When we bought the house, it was covering the entire back of the house. And it has leaves that look like, they come out, look like a lot like elm tree leaves. I mean, they come out a central stem, and there'll be 10, you know, like 5 on one side, 5 on the other, or something like that. And anyway, wow. Nobody's been able to tell me what it was. And so you thought
it was Virginia creeper. The guys are suggesting that it's Creeping Charlie.
Yeah.
Well,
I don't know about Creeping Charlie, but... Whatever it is, I'd love to get rid of it.
All right. Does that elaboration paint a clearer picture for you, Joe?
Tim? I'll tell you. The scientific name with Virginia creeper is quinquefolia, which, you know, that's 5 leaflets. So Tim, I gave a good story on Creeping Charlie. Doggone it, I hope it helped somebody. But but this does sound like a very odd thing with Virginia creeper, and it should not be that hard to manage. But Tim, what do you think?
Yeah, if it's Virginia creeper, it's a woody, and it's not super aggressive. At first, I thought maybe Wisteria, which can grow very, very fast and be very invasive, but Anne said there's 5 leaves on one side, 5 on another, so that I don't see that as a palmate, like a Virginia creeper. Again, you know, maybe a picture, maybe you could send a picture, and that would be great. But if it is, let's just say it's Virginia creeper, and we want to get rid of it, I would pull it off the house because it'll anchor into the brick or wood or whatever your house is with those tendrils.
Well, let's do this, Anne. If you want to send a picture to talk@wvxu.org, I will forward it to these guys and they will get back to you. Does that work, Anne?
Yeah, that would be great.
All right. Well, thank you for calling back.
I'll take a picture of my cicadas, too.
Oh, I want to see them. I want to see them. Thanks so much for calling in from Northwest Dayton, and we do appreciate it. All right, so I've got about 2 minutes. I want to get through 4 so emails that we got over the course of the day. So we need your tersest answers, guys. We got an email from Janelle who says, I have a small tree on my porch that I bring inside during the winter. Will cicadas burrow into the pot, Joe?
No.
Okay.
No, they may show up on the stem. Just knock them off.
Just knock them off, Janelle. Just knock them off and let the robins deal with them. Phil writes in from Claremont County to say, I just became aware of invasive poison hemlock growing on my property. Now I notice it growing alongside roads and in fields all over the place. How concerned should I get about this plant, and what is the best control method for it? This is poison hemlock we're talking about. Is that something that you can help with, Tim?
Yeah, I would, if it's in your yard or near a fence where children are playing, I would certainly eradicate it. You definitely want to cut the flower heads off before they go to seed and create a bigger problem. But I'm losing the name of it right now, but,
wild parsnip.
Parsnip. Thank you, Joe.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not that, that's not as big a problem as parsnip, where you wouldn't want to even brush against it, or you certainly wouldn't want to cut it.
All right. Well,
hemlock can be bad.
Well, Phil, thank you so much for sharing the observation. Good luck with that poison hemlock out there. We appreciate you turning to us for some help. And we got an email from David who writes in to say, well, before it takes over the world, and it will, how to eliminate, control, or even negotiate trumpet vine, which he refers to as the insidious.
Okay, Tim, I'm sorry. Tim, yeah. What do you think?
And again, we're talking about a native plant that,
yeah,
I don't know. I guess we're all a little different that way, but native plants have coexisted and mutually benefited with native wildlife for centuries. So we should want them around us.
But if he wanted to control it, perhaps, is that an option?
Well, a structure, maybe an arbor or a structure where you can display it. If it's, I don't know all the different parts of this, but if it's growing on your house or something that you want to get, you certainly wouldn't want it there, and you could cut it off of that. But
that could be a follow up, another follow up, because I'm kind of concerned here, because trumpet vine, like Tim says, is a native, and man, I'll tell you, there's certain pollinators, particularly hummingbirds, just love it. And it's a mainstay for hummingbirds. And so, where I see it growing in the wild, it doesn't tend to be that invasive. So maybe a picture to make sure we're talking about trumpet vine.
Okay, well, send us a picture, and I'll forward that off to them, Dave.
Yeah.
Quick email from Corinne, who says, we live in Erlanger, which is an older neighborhood. We have lots of cicadas. The shells are covering the trunks of trees in our yard and anything else they can climb. They're not a bother to us. She says, I prefer the cicadas over the 90-degree weather. She says, my 8-year-old daughter is experiencing her first brood, and she loves it. She very much wants to be an entomologist. She started hunting them about a week ago, and now their home is an insect habitat. There you go, Joe Boggs, a future protege. Thank you, Joe.
Go.
Thank you, Tim Osborne. Apologies to the callers and emailers we didn't get to today. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition. I'm Michael Monks. We'll talk again tomorrow.